Friday the 13th of May, Rabbi Sholem Siegel.
The Vilna Gaon's Equation, a true peace-loving religion.
Good morning. Another 2-3 years ago, I was in a park in Bournemouth, and a Muslim came over to me, and he started and entered conversation, and he started quite a different sort of Muslim to the one you'd expect to meet. And this has got nothing to do with Yom HaTzmaut, by the way, but he started saying to me that he believes that the Jews have every right to be in Israel, and he doesn't agree with all this violence, and according to him, their prophet did not agree with the violence. He was a peace-loving man. I thought some sort of a, you know, true peace-loving religion. What I want to examine today is where does it come from? Because it's not just in Islam, it happens in other religions as well. You look back in history, the violence which comes in the name of religion, where is that rooted? What's the cause of such violence? So I'm going to you say the Shem Shemayim. Okay, we'll see. So a number of years ago, there was the UN agency made a world study of first world countries, looking at statistics of violence in schools. And I actually heard from somebody in Golden Screen who possibly is retired from that sort of area of work. He said the findings were so shocking. They were too embarrassed. They were contemplating not publishing their findings. We're not talking about third world countries. We're not even talking about second. We're talking about first world countries. But what was Nogea to us is that Israel was found to be the eighth most violent first world country in the world in terms of school violence. Just to give you some figures. Grades 6 to 10, they found that 50% of pupils had been involved in violence. A sociologist from Bar-Ilan, these are just some statistics. 43% had experienced violence in the last 30 days. 13% of pupils in high school admitted that they bring weapons to school. Right? And the list goes on. In 1 week, 2 murders. One was actually in Nazareth, so that doesn't necessarily mean it was anything to do with. But two murders in 1 week. And as I said, the statistics go on. As you can well imagine, there was an uproar in Israel, particularly in the Knesset, obviously, and there was a massive national debate about what exactly could be done about this, what was the cause for it. Some people said experts said it's the overcrowding in schools. The average man on the street blamed it on the police. You know, they suggest perhaps we should have metal detectors like they have in America, you know, as if that's going to work. You know, teachers blamed it on the ministry for refusing, you know, and introducing harsh measures, etc., etc. And then others obviously blamed it on violence, television violence and all these sort of things. And the kids, all the suggestions were really laughable. Rav Aaron Feldman, the Rosh Yeshiva now in Ne'er Yisrael, Baltimore, who was there at the time, he says that he asked that in a few chadorim, he asked the children there, have you ever seen weapons in school? And they laughed at him. They thought he was joking. He said, yeah, there's obviously good reasons why, or not such good reasons, why the government wanted to overlook this point. But he says the reason, the cause for this was quite obvious. The reason for this violence is quite obvious, and he based it on an idea of the Vilna Gaon, which, Be'ezrat Hashem, I just want to share with you now. But just before we come to the idea of the Vilna Gaon, let me just give you a little hakdama. In Parashas Chayisara, when Eliezer, the servant of Avram, he went looking for a wife for Yitzchak, so he eventually he found, well, not eventually, pretty quickly, he saw Rivka Imenu, he realized this was the right one. So the Pasuk says that he gave her Shnei Tzimidim al Yadeha, he gave her 2 bracelets on her hands, on her arms, Asara Zahov Mishkala. They weighed 10 golden pieces. And Rashi says that Shnei Tzimidim, he was alluding to her, he was hinting at the 2 luchos which Klal Yisrael would receive in the future. And Asara Zahov Mishkala, because they would have the Aseres HaDibros. So I once heard from a Choshev HaTalmid Chacham in Eretz Yisrael, but I forget his name, a Mashgiach there, who said the Shnei Tzimidim is to give over the message that we know. It comes from the Loshen Tzamud, Shnei Tzimudim. That the 2 luchos are Tzimudim means they go absolutely, they are interlocked, interdependent on one another. And perhaps we may well add that this is a message Eliezer was giving over to Rivka. We know that Avraham Avinu, he was the pillar of Chesed. Not to say Ben Adam Lamokim, he wasn't, but his, what he stood out for was his Ben Adam Lachaveru, which obviously led to Ben Adam Lamokim, the way he introduced people to the idea that there was a God, there was a God to give thanks to when they, after giving, after eating, etc. Yitzchak, on the other hand, we know is associated more with Avodah, with Ben Adam Lamokim. But Ben Adam Lamokim on its own will not get you anywhere. He needed an equal part, somebody who was an expert in Ben Adam Lachaveru. And who was that? None less than Rivka Imenu, we see with when she drew the water for the Eliezer, for his men, the camels. And he said to her, this is the idea, this is the idea of your marriage. It's Shnei Tzimidim, the two of you have to work together. Asarah Zahav Mishkalom, the two sets, the five and the five of the Aseres HaDibros, they actually mirror one another. And this is the idea of the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon says that the two sides of the Luchos, they are actually a mirror of one another. There's a direct correlation. So apparently between the Anochi Hashem Elokecha and the Tirtzach, there's going, the first of each of the two sides, there's going to be a connection. What is the connection between the two? So we know, this week's Seder, it says, V'ahavta l'reacha kamecha. And Rabbi Akiva famously said, V'ahavta l'reacha kamecha, zeh klal godol b'Torah. This is the all-encompassing cloud of the Torah, V'ahavta l'reacha kamecha. Similar, echoing the words of Hillel, the Gemara in Shabbos, when a potential ger came to Hillel and asked him to teach him the whole Torah whilst he was standing on one foot. So Hillel said to him, Daloch sani lechavroch lesiavi. That which is hateful to you, do not do to your friend. Zui kol ha-Torah kula, this is the whole Torah. V'idoch pirusha, the rest of it is just the pirush. Pirushu zilgamo, go learn it now. And Rashi says, lechavroch lesiavi, it could be Ta'akodesh Baruch Hu, your ultimate friend, but it could equally be the Ben Adam Lachaveru, dicker friend. Don't do to others what is hateful to you. Otherwise known as v'ahavta l'reacha kamecha. Love others as you love yourself. The problem is, if this is the Zer Klal Godol B'Torah, this is the underpinning of the whole Torah, how do we reconcile this with the Gemara in Makkos, towards the end of Makkos, Daf Chavdala there, where the Gemara takes us through various stages how the Nevi'im, they whittled down the 613 mitzvahs to try and, it was too much for Klal Yisrael to focus on, it was overwhelming, so therefore they whittled it down to find the underpinnings of the Torah, from which the skeleton, from which all the other 613 mitzvahs could be built upon. And eventually it got whittled down further and further until eventually Chavakuk came along, the He'emidon Alachas. And he whittled it down to one single mitzvah. And what was that? The Tzadik Be'emunah Yechiyah. The mitzvah of Emunah. So is it V'ahavta l'reacha kamecha, or is it Emunah? This is the question. I think, I have a feeling the Kli Yorka speaks about this. But I think the answer is, possibly the Kli Yorka says along these lines, there's no stira, there's no contradiction. If you really think about it, Emunah in the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, otherwise known as Anochi Hashem Elokecha, and V'ahavta l'reacha kamecha really stem from one root. Just to explain, before we explain that, the Sefer HaChinuch says, the mitzvah of Kavidus of Yechov Esenecho, use this as our example. He says, the Yesod of Kibud of Bo'eim is really one of our Koras HaTov. But why? What's the reason for this mitzvah? Is because ultimately, through having our Koras HaTov, through being Mechavid, one's parents, it will bring a person to the recognition that there's a third partner who's equally, or perhaps more than equally, entitled to our Koras HaTov. And that's the Ribbono Shel Olam. Says the Sefer HaChinuch, it's often difficult for us to recognize the Tovus that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does for us. Because we don't see HaKadosh Baruch Hu physically, not right in front of our eyes. Whereas our parents, we see. So through the Kibud Av V'Aim is a stepping stone to bring us to the Ben Adam Lamokim. Likewise, V'ahavta l'reacha kamecha, the first thing a person has to get to is that I'm not the center of the universe. Right, we know that, yes, there is the idea of Bishvili Nivra Olam, but there's other people who also believe Bishvili Nivra Olam. Okay? So we have to break down that sense of egoism, and that's for Ahavta L'Reacha Kamecha. There are other people who are just as equally entitled to honor as myself. Once a person comes to that, we can then proceed to the next stage, which is perhaps a little more difficult in some respects to accept, and that is that actually, the only Anochi in the world is Anochi Hashem Elokecha. That actually in the face of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're all nothing more than ants at best. And when a person comes to that realization, then there's no lo tirtzo. Now coming back, let's come back to Rabbi Aaron Feldman's idea. He says, Anochi Hashem Elokecha and lo tirtzo go hand in hand. A person who believes that the only Anochi in the world is Hashem Elokecha, won't murder others because, okay, this person's annoying me, but he's got a right to exist as much as I do. But a person who does not believe in the Ribbono Shel Olam, a person who's maybe an atheist, so then he believes I have a right to exist. And if somebody gets in my way, so we'll bump him off. What's the problem with that? I'm the center of attention. I'm the center of existence. And if anyone gets in my way, what right does he have to exist? Once a person does not believe in Anochi Hashem Elokecha, it's going to spiral downwards to the next thing, but after Re'acha Kameicha would also fail. And once that fails, then a person believes it's all me. He says that's the problem. He says, sadly, in Eretz Yisrael, there's so many people who don't, many absolutely ignorant, don't even know what Shema Yisrael means. So therefore, if they don't have a sense of belief in the Ribbono Shel Olam, it's inevitable that it will eventually lead to Ratzicha. So you're going to ask me, why hasn't it always been like that? Because he says you've got all sorts of stop gaps, which will, for times, that's why you don't find violence everywhere in the world, because people have a sense of moral ethics and all these sort of things. And these can act as stop gaps, but they're nothing more than stop gaps. The only guaranteed way to promote peace and to promote or stop violence, to stop violence, is belief in the Ribbono Shel Olam. When a person realizes, Einod Mirabadu, we're all nothing more than just servants of the Ribbono Shel Olam, we're all equals in that sense, then there will be a sense of V'hata Re'acha Kameicha, there will not be this sense of Ritzicha and violence. In the Sefer Hadar Zakenim, it's from the Bali Tosfos. They say, they bring them Parashas Re'eh, that a certain min, a certain apostate, once asked Rabbi Nosson for Rabbi Meshulam. He was 12th century Bali Tosfos. And he asked him, why is it that the second goddess, the goddess we're going through now, why is it longer than the first goddess? But surely in the first Beis HaMikdash they served Avodah Zarah, in the second Beis HaMikdash they didn't serve Avodah Zarah. See, he answered him, he said, you're wrong. He said, in the first Beis HaMikdash, they served in the inanimate, or plant life. Right, if it was the inanimate, it was plant life, well, not literally plant life. It may be even animals they served, but nothing more than that. It was mainly getchkas, the inanimate.
Trees,
whatever it was, asherah, whatever it was, but it was nothing more than that. He said, therefore, that's finite, it's finite, and therefore the goddess was also finite. It ended after 70 years. But in the second Beis HaMikdash, they served human beings. Doesn't explain what they mean, but they served human beings. And serving human beings is far worse, because the human beings have a neshama, which is infinite. That obviously will prolong the goddess, makes the goddess far longer.
That's why we say you idolize somebody.
Exactly. So in a sefer called Cheref Pifias, he brings this there, and he explains a little bit more. And he says, basing himself on the Rambam as well, that it's quite clear what they were really referring to. One of the people we're referring to is Yoshki. That was what the fact that people served him, that was a sense of obviously Avodah Zarah. But as a result of that, the goddess, the second goddess, is far longer. That's what Rabbi Nosson Barabbi Meshulam was telling him. The Gemara already says in Yomah, it says, why was it in the first Beis HaMikdash? In the first Beis HaMikdash, the Gemara asks, why was it that the first Beis HaMikdash came back, after the destruction, the second Beis HaMikdash came back quicker than? It says, because in the first Beis HaMikdash, they may have been guilty of the three cardinals, but still, tolu b'tzchoinon basher. Even while serving getchkas and whatever they did, they still acknowledged that there was Anochi Hashem Elokecha. As contradictory as it may well sound, they actually believed, we can rely on the fact, Hashem wouldn't reject us. After all, we're his children, they acknowledged. Whereas in the second Beis HaMikdash, we didn't have tolu b'tzchoinon basher. Which, based on what the Bali Tosfos say, we understand why. Because their bitachon was no longer in Hashem. They didn't believe in God, they believed in a human being who claimed to be whatever he claimed to be. But Amaisa, their belief, they were serving now a human being. And that was the reason for the downfall. Let me just quote you a couple of examples where you see this in various Gemaras. The Gemara says, Gemara in Yomah, it says there were two Kohanim who were running up the Kevesh, right? They were having a race. The Gemara says they used to have a race to see who would get the Trumas Hadesha. Mitzvah, right, the start of the day. And the way they used to do it is whoever reached the top of the Mizbeach or within the top Daladamas, whoever got there first, he would be Socher to it. When did that stop? When did they stop having this race? Well, one time, there were two stories, but the kitza, one of the stories was that two Kohanim were running up the Kadesh, and one of them won, and the other one took a knife and stabbed him. But the Gemara goes on, shocking as it may sound, the Gemara goes on that the father came along, and the son who was in the throes, you know, in death throes there, the father said, just hold on, don't die yet, we need to get the knife out. It says not to be Matame the knife. So the Gemara says, the Gemara asks, what's going on here? Is it Peshat that the people, they were so sort of machmeh when it came to Tumah and Tahara, especially in the Beis HaMikdash, or is it that life was so cheap? Shfichas Domim was so cheap by them. And the Gemara proves that it was Shfichas Domim was so cheap. Why? The answer is because this wasn't a race for Kavod Shamayim. If it's a race for Kavod Shamayim, remember what Yaakov Avinu says. Yaakov Avinu, look at Rashi when he bought the Bechorah from Esau. So Rashi says, why did he buy out Esau? Not because he coveted the Bechorah. Not because he coveted the Avodah. It's because he said, Esau, the Rasha, he's not Roy Lekach. If Esau is Roy Lekach, so what difference if it's me or him? Whichever one of us gets to serve Hashem, it's all about Kavod Shamayim. But he took the Bechorah from Esau because he felt this would be a degradation in Kavod Shamayim. That's what bothered him. If we're racing for Kavod Shamayim, so he won the race. Okay, we had the race, he won. He's the one who's supposed to do it. But if it's a matter of personal Kavod, then you end up with Ritzicha. There's other, as I said, there's other Gemaras which illustrate this point. There's also a Gemara in Gittin, a very, very tragic story where a woman and her seven sons, it doesn't say there the name of the Isha, but basically the seven sons were brought in front of the king or the ruler there, and he tried to get them to bow down to him. And the kids, each one quoted the pasuk, they took them out to be killed. It came to the seventh son. And the seventh son, the ruler said to him, look, all I'm asking you to do is, you know, I'll drop something on the floor, you bow, just pick it up. That's effectively all I'm asking you to do. And the son said to him, he said something like Chaval, and the Loshon Ev, he said, Chaval, b'kitzur, you're doing it because of your own kovid. If you look at the Loshon of the Gemara there, it's about your kovid. This is not about the kovid of what you believe in. It's your own kovid. And what's the result of it? Seven innocent children, and the mother who also jumped off, threw herself off, died as a result of it. Where there's kovod of a human being, you can call it in the name of religion. But if it's kovod of the human being, the result is going to be violence. That's inevitable. Now that we've come to that, we can come sort of full circle back to our question that we started out with. Why is it that these other religions, there's such violence? Where does it come from? So let me quote to you what Rabbi Victor Miller, in his proofs of the authenticity of the Torah, sort of throwing out what these so-called Bible critics, they believe that Moshe Rabbeinu, he penned it himself, he says that can't be. It's a well-known proof, but he puts it beautifully over in Kedarkei. He says, because if it was, if Moshe Rabbeinu personally wrote it, why would he have written so much criticism against himself? So much criticism against Klal Yisrael, the Chet HaEgel, you want to cover these things up, brush them under the carpet. If it's propaganda for Yiddishkeit, for our religion, why are you writing about these things? All the things that went wrong, all the suffering of the Jews. You'd want to, especially their venerable leader, you wouldn't want to write about the Mei Meriva and these sort of things. He says, if somebody can write that, it's obviously not the human being. It's not just propaganda. He says, and now let's compare this to the other religions. Let me quote to you from one of the books which they brought out from Rabbi Victor Miller. Just his Loshen, I can't do it justice without quoting. He writes, first of all, he's talking about the New Testament. He says it was written by a bunch of liars with only one purpose in mind. And this is the key words, to promote him. Right? I'm just adding, i.e. not God. It was to promote him. It was to promote a human being. Therefore, there's not a drop of critique. I cannot claim to have seen, you know, read any of the New Testament. But he had. And he says, you can look from beginning to end, you will not find a single drop of critique against their leader. Why? Because it was written to promote him. Right? So what's the result of that? We look back in history, all the pogroms and everything, wasn't just against the Jews, but a lot of it was against the Jews. Why? Because when you've got a religion which is built on the human covet, then the result is going to be Ritzicha. People who don't agree with what I hold, you'll end up with Ritzicha. What does he have to say about Islam, returning to my friend back in Bournemouth? What does he have to say about that? He says the following. In contrast, if you look in the Quran, you won't find one accusation against Muhammad. Never is a word of blame said against him, because the purpose of the Quran is to spread propaganda for Islam. Therefore, he couldn't afford to criticize himself. It would be insane. Again, the same idea. You've got a guy who is illiterate. But on the other hand, he's an absolute egotist. He wants to create... So what's the result of that? Radicalism and etc. and everything that comes in its wake. Because again, when you've got a religion which is built on the covert of a single man, he can say what he wants. When it's built by a human being for his own covert, the result is inevitably going to be, says the Vilna Gaon, with this equation, the result is going to be Ritzicha. If you don't believe in Anochi Hashem Elokecha, the result will be violence. That's inevitable. Just one or two words about the Ahavta L'Reacha Kameicha before, and then I'll wrap it up, just bring it back to where we started. The Ahavta L'Reacha Kameicha, just words from, sort of taking from what we find, the Ramak, for example. The Ramak says, how can a person come to a level of Ahavta L'Reacha Kameicha? After all, as the Ramban already says, how can you expect me to love others as myself? It's within our natures, within our very fibres, that a person loves himself more than others. You can say love others, but as much as myself. So the Ramak writes, Rav Moshe Cordovero writes, he says in Sefer Tome Devora, he says if we appreciate that Klal Yisrael is really one united body, there wouldn't be any jealousy. If a person, you've got a single body, and let's say a person's running the marathon, and he wins the marathon, so do the arms get jealous of the legs, because the legs are the ones which, you know, were the main... Of course not. Why? Because we're all together. You know, one of the other ayahs they bring is from Yaakov Avinu with the stones under his head. They were all competing, Olai Yaniach Tzadik Yisroel. So what happened? They all joined together. So the obvious question is, unless you learn they literally converged inside one stone, that is one answer to the question. But another answer given to this question is, what's the question by the way, is that if they all joined together, so you've got one massive stone now. Yaakov Avinu's head didn't grow any bigger. His head would still only be one on one part of the stone. So they bring, based on the Zohar Kodesh, the answer is, you're only jealous when we're separate stones. I'm not jealous if I'm part of that stone. So he's resting his head on that part. We're all in this together. We're one big stone. It doesn't bother me where the head of the tzaddik is resting. When you join together as one, it doesn't make the slightest bit of difference. That being the case, says Rav Moshe Cordovero, if we could appreciate that the whole of Klal Yisrael are one single united body, then there wouldn't be this jealousy. Because if somebody else is successful, see, he's cleverer than me. He's successful, but that's to my advantage as well. We're all working together. If he's successful, I'm successful. He says that's one etzah how we can reach V'ahavta L'Reacha Kameicha. But here's one other one. Sort of just a little bit of background. I remember once... perhaps more than once, sitting there at lunchtime, and I was just sort of watching people come in, and my mind was just sort of just working, I was thinking, this person, he never comes into the Beis HaMedrash, this person's never learning. And something hopped hold of myself, I said, why am I, you know, so negative? So I decided down the spot, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to try an experiment. Every person that walks into the lunchroom now, I'm going to try and think of something positive. Yeah. And it's unbelievable, it works. Suddenly, even the people who, believe me, I didn't have the highest opinion of, you can find the most incredible things about them. I'll tell you an amazing Maisa which I read recently, and you may have read it, but you'd have to admit that you read kids speak like me. So in he's got a beautiful story there. He tells of two young children, apparently it made headlines in Eretz Yisrael. I hadn't heard about it here. I think in Dimona, I'm not sure, but I think that's where it was. I think they were called Michael and Tova. Right, these two children, brother and sister, they were always fighting. And it wasn't just between them. They were very, very negative, complaining about everything. So one day, the father comes in, and he had this massive gift wrapped box. And they got all excited, what's in it? He said, I'm not telling you. He says, we're going to start an exercise. And that is, I want each of you to take a notebook, and each time you see something positive, write it down. It could be anything, write it down. And for every positive thing you write down, you get a point. And when between you, you reach 500 points, then I'll tell you what's in the box. And when you reach 1,000 points between you, we'll tally it up, we'll see who's got more, and that person will win the prize. So they got to work, and they started writing down, this one writing down, you know, that mummy made a really nice supper, never would have thought like that before, suddenly the supper was really nice. And then he started, you know, even writing that his sister let him go ahead with something, started writing nice things about her. And then at a certain point, you know, after a few days, the boy started helping his little sister. He said, why don't you write such... And she said to him, why are you, you know, this is a competition, why are you helping me? So he said, well, I don't know, but this is, you know, we're in this together. And Bekitsa, through that, they start to just sort of keep the story moving. Bekitsa, they were working together, they reached their 500 mark, they basically had the same, they were comparing notes all the way through. They reached, and it was an electric scooter. They continued on. But during that period, whilst they were continuing on, one of the teachers or one of the children in school had noticed a difference in the whole outlook of that child and asked the child, what's happened? So the child told the teacher. The teacher said, what a brilliant idea. Do you know what? If you're agreeable, I'm going to introduce this in this class. But it's a whole classroom, so they have to reach 10,000 points. And that's what they did. And it started like that. And then it snowballed further, because then the headmaster of the school, he also noticed a difference in that class. So he asked the teacher what's going on. And the headmaster said, what a brilliant idea. Maybe we should do this for the whole school. I don't know, what, 100,000 points, whatever it is, right? And it went on like this. And then apparently it snowballed from one school to another. And apparently it made its way from north to, you know, all the way up the country, south, all the way across the country, there were schools doing this. And in the end of the story, it's quite a sweet little ending, that finally these two children, they reached their 1,000 points, and they decided, if they were neck and neck, they were going to share the scooter. But they took out the scooter, and then the father saw them arguing about who should go on it first. So he thought, what's the point? What's the point of, you know, we're back to square. But then he listened carefully. No, no, it wasn't. Michal was saying, Toba, you should go first. And Toba was saying, you should go first. But there's a very, very powerful epilogue to this story. And that is that Nebuch, Toba became ill. She was presumably diagnosed with the dreaded machala. And so the father went to one of the gedolim and he asked, you know, what does one do? So he said, your daughter has got such incredible zechusim, that's what you have to evoke. So what they arranged is, all the schools which had started this project, they all put on school buses, and they all went to the Kosel, and they had the Yom HaTefillah with all these children, literally thousands, tens of thousands of these children, all converged on at the Kosel, and they had this Yom HaTefillah. She then had her next appointment, and they scanned again, and it has gone completely. That was the end of the story. This is the power of simply having a good eye, looking for the good in another person. Let me just finish with the words of somebody called Dr. Dorfik Hamid. Right? It was they had an interview with him. He was somebody who he called himself from terrorist to humanist. He was somebody who was I don't know how extreme he was, to be honest with you, but and he changed completely. And they asked him, what was the final, the makkah, the patish, what made you change? So he said, I'll read to you a little bit of what he said, but he said, it happened because I was honest. He said, he imagined he imagined himself in other people's shoes, and he tried to think as they did, but he said the climax of his metamorphosis came when, I don't know if you remember Daniel Pearl, Daniel Pearl, he said when he was murdered. He said, at the time he was in New Zealand, and he said he couldn't stop crying. And he writes the following. He says, the next day I woke up at 2 a.m., went into the kitchen and wrote the following words. I swear that I will never let your name be erased from the book of history. I will write your name with my tears and carve your name on the mountaintop so everyone will see it. They did not kill only you, Daniel. They killed the meaning of love and truth and the dreams of future generations. I swear on your pain as they slaughtered you. I swear on the tears of your unborn child who is still in the womb that I will never forget you. And here's his closing words. And this, I think, sums up everything we've said. If they killed you because you are a Jew, then I too am a Jew from now on. In other words, a true Jew. To be a true Jew, there's sadly not all Jews are peace lovers. But a true Jew is a peace lover. And a peace lover is a true Jew. Have a good Shabbos.